Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and WNST.net. We're doing Baltimore Positive. We're back at State Fair, which means Benedicts and meat and all sorts of stuff for Don Mueller over here.
Your chicken and waffles.
You know, all I would want to ask for you at State Fair is that you could walk home from here. You could walk it off. And on the 4th of July, when the parade's coming through here, right?
Well, remember, last week we had to apologize because you cheated on State Fair and you had chicken and waffles at one of our other great sponsors at Fadley. So, you know, you're not a monogamous guy when
it comes to... So you go to Fadley's and they just put food in front of you and I'm expected to eat it at 8 a.m. And I did. And I'll do it again next week with Mayor Jack Young. But I tell you what... You set today. By the way, Don Mueller is the best executive producer in all of Baltimore radio. All of our guests are because Don is working hard to make these things happen. Except that Larry Hogan comes on. I'll take credit for that. Today's guest
is
very near and dear.
Today's guest, you're going up the street to Jennings as well,
right?
You're
going to
have a hamburger up at Jennings.
Yeah, absolutely. We've signed Jennings to be our sponsor. We'll be there in a couple of weeks. I'll probably be there after the second margarita on 4th of July.
You know what that says, Nestor? It says that a lot of businesses, and it's growing by the week. A lot of businesses are going to join us in this journey. They believe, they see the connection to Baltimore and the region and the state. And they know we're not going to build walls and they want to be part of it. So Fadley, State Fair, Jennings, all the others that are coming on, thank you. So now,
we have today a true enemy of the people, one of my fellow enemies of the people and journalists. C. Fraser Smith is there. You know, I used to watch you walk through the fifth floor on Calvert Street in the late 80s, early 90s, and I was always very intimidated by anyone that was a little older or a little more Hopkins-y looking. I was a Dundalk kid at this point, right? So, like, Alvarez and Simon and those guys, I was good with them. Etlin liked me a lot, still my Facebook friend. Bob Nussgart is responsible for me. I drink with him occasionally. But, like, you were working on lefty and bias. I'll never forget. Where I was the morning. I was in the newsroom that morning with Larry Harris going to second edition and Len Bias is dead. And, you know, I'm 18 years old rolling my sleeves up in the summer of 86. And I guess that's where the story would pick up for me, for you, was you rolled your sleeves up and wrote a book that everybody read. Everybody I knew read it, you know?
You know, I thought somebody had made a horrendous mistake that morning, and probably a lot of other people thought the same thing. I thought they must have been talking about his father.
We had a thing on the wire that was called Urgent. Do you remember that? Urgent was in the green type in our newsroom, and when something came on the Urgent, that was the wire, that was the hotline, and that was for earthquakes, right, assassinations, that was for that sort of stuff. And that morning, the Urgent thing came, and it had, like, typos in it, and it looked a little crayon-y because it was such an urgent, crazy morning.
Well, when we get to talking later in the show about Fraser's book, we're going to talk about Urgent because it comes up again. It's interesting that you mentioned that. But let's jump back. And Fraser, much decorated, several Pulitzer Prize nominations. I mean, historic career at The Sun, wonderful career at WYPR. Full disclosure, Fraser asked me a few tough questions along the way in my public journey.
I hope so, right?
This is going to be spicy. You hope so. Boy, that says a lot, and there's no way we can do this.
Well, you were doing your job, and I was doing my job.
And you know, Fraser, we're going to come back to bias, but one of the things we always say about this show, it's never a straight line. I always say in terms of journalism, people were always surprised. If you remember a few years back, it was during the Smith administration. There was a new paper in Baltimore, supposed to be a little right-leaning, the Baltimore Examiner. It was supposed to challenge the Sun. Didn't last very long, but they were pretty tough during that time, particularly on Democrats, at least from our perspective, and were pretty hard on Jim Smith. And the day that the paper closed, someone from The Sun called and said, we'd like to get a comment from the county executive. I guess it's a happy day for him that the Examiner's no longer around. I said, well, I'm pretty sure I know what the county executive's going to say, but let me go down the hall and I'll ask him and I'll get a direct quote from him. And of course, Jim Smith said what we would expect Jim Smith to say, or people who used to live by a certain set of values that we question in this day and age. Jim Smith said, no, it's not a happy day. It's never a happy day when a paper closes its doors. Just as you said, they're there to do their job. It's their job to hold all of us in public office accountable. And we just don't see that very much anymore.
Well, you want, if you're running against somebody, you want that person to be held accountable as well as you know you're going to be. And if you see something else happening with your opponent, that's not a happy day for you.
No, not at all. So let's jump back because, Nestor, you described it. Frazier described it. I was an assistant principal at Dundalk High School. Very similar reaction to yours, Frazier. I'm in my office. Somebody comes in and says, Len Bias died. And I look, and I didn't believe it. You didn't believe it, Frazier. So walk us through, then, your journey with the Len Bias story. Let us be the listeners. You tell us about your journey.
Because we're coming up on it. I mean, June 19th, 1986. I mean, you remember that day. You always remember that day.
So walk us through how you got involved in the story and where it took you.
Well, I got involved because I was writing a profile for a magazine in Washington of John Slaughter, who was the chancellor of the university. And he ended up really being in the, sorry to use this image, but the crosshairs of the media. I mean, the media was on his campus for months after this happened. And he was somebody that was a big supporter of basketball. And as that story went along, many unhappy things were discovered about the plight of athletes in College Park. So I just sort of stepped beyond that to do the book. I mean, I thought, you know, there's definitely a book here. You see almost every element of society is being challenged. I mean, the so-called student athletes were on campus 40% of the time. How many of us could prosper under those circumstances?
Is that because they were traveling to games?
They were traveling during the basketball season. They were not on campus. So, their cycle was to essentially fail in the spring, get a little bit better in the summer school, and get eligible again in the fall. And it just never came close to being anything like student athletes. But it's a big problem. It continues today.
It's 33 years later. I don't think we've come close to solving much of this, right? I mean, if anything, it's been exacerbated by how much money the coaches are making and how they keep their jobs and the shoe companies. And I do think it's amazing every year when it rolls out of March Madness how much money is involved in the sport and how the people playing don't get it. And in 1986, same case, right? I mean, it was
exactly the same case. And since then, it's been the same case at UNC, where I went to school, at Penn State, at Ohio State, everywhere. It just doesn't get any better.
So it didn't matter whether it was Dean Smith, Jimmy Valvano. It was Tommy Izzo. It's all the same.
Were you a sports fan? I mean,
totally.
Okay, all right. So I
thought I was an athlete.
Well, he's a heck of a golfer. But
this was a natural thing for you to write about at that point. I mean, it was the biggest story going. I mean, we were all Maryland people at that point. So you didn't really want to write a sports book, but you edged that way because it was bigger than sports.
My assignment for the magazine was to do something about somebody that was in the most difficult moments of his life. I mean, here you had a black chancellor in the middle of a crisis involving players that sometimes were referred to as, they were on a plantation. They were working for the boosters, and you had an educator. You had a really smart guy, a really caring, decent human being who was just cornered by us and by the world, by people who somehow, people broke every possible way about Lefty. People loved Lefty, and he was kind of a lovable guy. He really was. I mean,
ball coach.
Well, I know you know. Hell, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, I can coach.
I'm coach.
I'm going to be the UCLA at East, boys.
And he would come into your house convince your mother and father that you were going to get a hell of an education. You were going to, and it was going to be fun because he was going to be the UCLA of the East.
That's it. I remember that quote
and
well,
all
John
of a sudden
Lucas,
he,
Tom McMillan.
But he's also sullied as being crooked in some way. Or, I mean, Valvano dies a legend and all that. But, I mean, the Shackelford and the Chucky Brown, I mean, the recruiting part of all of that was really greasy, right? I mean, Dean Smith managed to avoid that and stuff, but 35 years later, Patino and all of the things that have happened that began there, Drizelle was the first guy perceived as greasy because one of his kids died in a cocaine-fueled thing. That's sort of the end of your credibility, even if your credibility's good, and even if you are a good guy and you didn't do anything wrong or even perceived as wrong, but the cover-up then became part of, you know, like, the story, right?
Well, that's the question, Frazier, when you dug into it, because there is a lot of affection out there for Lefty, obviously, finally getting into the Hall of Fame. But
on that, by the way, that speech, if you haven't, you seen ahead. Lefty give the speech?
I have not.
It's one of the greatest things.
Wow.
Go watch Lefty give his speech.
All right, if you're listening, go watch Lefty give
it's one of his greatest speeches. It's phenomenal.
His Hall of Fame speech?
His Hall of Fame speech was a year and a half ago. Show stopping.
All right, then everybody out there, go listen to it. We're trying to focus on leadership. So one of the themes of our talking with you today, in addition to talking about your outstanding new book, The Daily Miracle, which I'm sure Nestor will devour, coming from the world of journalism. But in addition to that, we're talking about leadership. So what did you learn from both watching Lefty and Chancellor Slaughter at that time try to navigate this crisis? What conclusions did you draw in the book?
Well, it's hard to be a good guy. You know, Slaughter knew and said and was quoted at least a year before all this happened that the basketball program was like being on the back of a tiger. He just knew that there were aspects of it that were dangerous and were not really honest. And yet, at the same time, he was famous for sitting under the basket on the Maryland end of the court. I mean, he was really into it. He really loved it. But he also wanted it to be as good as it could be. And he knew that it was a daily project, and you just never knew what was going to happen. And so I think I admired Slaughter a lot, and I think he was under immeasurable pressure. But I think he tried to do what was the right thing, and he handled the pressure pretty well. He wasn't happy with it, but he saw it for what it was. I think he believed that there was a racial aspect to it. And he thought that the players were sort of were victims, but they were also great beneficiaries, and there was something that they needed to be taken advantage of that they weren't. I mean, one of the things that you couldn't almost expect them to. A lot of those kids were brought into university on very flimsy academic credentials. And people would say, well, they're not going to do anything other than play ball.
But that's the way we beat North Carolina and Duke, right? That's the only way we can beat them. We have to beat them. That's the way we win. And if we win, we make money. And at the heart of it, now, it's about money. And then I'm sure it was about money, too. But that's the only way to win. Everybody else is cheating. We have to cheat, too.
Well, there's a great Gary Williams story. The boosters were unhappy with the administration that came in after Slaughter was gone, because they were trying to stand by their standards. And there were a couple of kids that they couldn't get admitted. And they cried, and they made noise, and they went to the chancellor and said, Gary's recruiting with his hands tied behind his back. And so you need to do something about it. So there was a meeting in Kerwin was then the president, meeting in his office with some of the boosters, with Gary Williams, and they were there to talk about these two kids, and they had all their scholastic high school records to show everybody.
It's right? Like Blutarsky 0.0.
They had the data, and the boosters are reading this, and they're kind of looking up and saying, these kids can't read. Right. I mean,
they can shoot.
They can shoot.
They can
shoot,
Gary, but they can't read.
It's 20 points and 10 rebounds. Right. 20, come on.
That which is a criminal story in itself about the fact they can't read, but go ahead.
I mean, so at the beginning of the meeting, at least, Gary and his supporters are saying, if you don't let these guys play for us, they're going to play for somebody else and beat our brains out. And that's exactly what happened.
Pat Kennedy will take them down to Florida State. Right. That's the way it is.
Well, there were legendary stories about kids getting it somehow waivers to Duke and Carolina that had gotten turned down from Maryland. And a lot of it, as you said, was in the wake of the bias tragedy. How did Slaughter come out on the other end from your perspective? Because I'm always interested how leaders come out on the other end.
Well, Slaughter was an engineer, which was really interesting. There weren't very many black engineers in those days, but his he talked about as a young man, he had to almost overcome the feelings and beliefs and concerns of his parents because he wanted to be an engineer. He started out being a ham radio operator, and
as opposed to a ham on the radio.
You said that. But he thought, somehow or another, he had gotten into his head that he could do this kind of work, and he ended up being able to do it. Well, Reagan got him to come to Washington to be head of one of the big science organizations, agencies. And then he got recruited by Peter O'Malley of Prince George's County, because they were in the middle of a majority black county, I think, almost already by then. And a lot of their students were black, and they didn't have much black representation. And so they really wanted him. This is a quality guy, so let's get him. And it worked really well, as long as it worked, right? And then he gets through all of it. The committee that he put together, as I recall, I haven't looked at this in a long time, recommended that Lefty go, and he did.
Right.
And then he hired Bob Wade from Baltimore to come down and be the coach, and it didn't work out very well. But by the time they got through all of that, well, what was Slaughter saying then? Oh, you don't think I'm moving quickly enough. I'm going to move quickly, and drove up to Baltimore and hired Wade, which everybody thought was going to be a disaster, and it wasn't good. So
because it's hard to make that leap from high school to the NCAA with all the rules and regulations. It's just a different world.
Totally, totally different. Well, so Slaughter had an opportunity to go to It was a very good private college in California. So he went there, and I'm sure he did well. I haven't really kept up with him. I actually flew out there once and interviewed him there. I interviewed him a lot in College Park. I actually always felt that he wasn't ever really coming totally clean with me. I don't think he was lying to me. He just wasn't telling me a lot about what actually happened.
Well, the lawyers probably, certainly the lawyers dictated that. I mean, we're coming up on a year now with a young man from our area who passed away. So you say, what's the long tail on the leadership, Don? And maybe we've already answered that question, right? So this is all 1986, 87, 88, Bob Wade. And we're talking about Gary Williams and Kerwin years later. And we're still having meetings about having unqualified kids who can't read and letting them into the school because they can dribble. And that's just, look, I've been doing sports radio for 30 years. There's not one person in the audience that doesn't expect that, want that. In some way, that's what they want the Terps to be. They, cheat, do whatever you need. We just want you to win. And if you win, we're okay with that. And, I mean, Patriots fans have been fine with, this is really, Republicans have been fine with this, quite frankly, which could bring the thing full circle. You know, I wrote a couple things down, and I maybe this is for the next segment, but I think of you as such a journalist, and you say that Slaughter let me in, and he told me some things, but not too much. And Don, you said when Fraser called, or when the exam, when somebody calls and you're in government, and you're the PR guy, I said there's a 60 Minutes call. When you call and say, I'm knocking on your door, you're not doing a fluff piece. I mean, it kind of, And I have that issue after 30 years. Sometimes I knock on a door, and they think I'm there to promote them, because I am. I'm here promoting State Fair, and I'm promoting an Eggs Benedict. I'm promoting Baltimore. I'm promoting your county. I'm promoting your book. Sometimes they want me to exploit them, which is they want me to advertise for them without paying me, right? And then sometimes they think I'm there to expose them.
They want you to be their friend.
Okay, but then they think I'm there to expose them.
So you have to give them the speech.
Right. Well,
and of course, often you are talking. Well, often you are talking to somebody that you know well,
right?
And so the speech. The speech is pretty brief. We know each other, but I'm a reporter, and it's a different thing than being your friend. I hope that I'll be your friend down the road, right. But you know, I need to have you speak to me. I need to tell me what's going on here.
And it never. You know, my experience, and again, Fraser and I did interact a lot over the years. You know, I interacted with a lot of the media, and you mentioned friends. I mean, I'll consider, by most accounts, folks would point to a Jane Miller as the toughest investigative reporter in town, and I consider Jane a friend. I mean, I would hope she would consider me a friend. But I never had any delusions at the fact that Jane and I were friends, that she wouldn't be coming after me or county government or anything.
Well, let's just say you got a DUI one night. Yeah, I mean, you got a DUI one night. It's not her job to hide that you had a DUI.
Right.
It's her job to call you and say what happened, right? I mean, literally, the exposed part is interesting, because as I meet these young athletes today, and you wonder why I'm talking to people who actually want to talk to me, right, is that there is a point where everyone now is coached up in government, in leadership, in every business, that if anything goes wrong, you know, someone trips on the floor here, there's a, because of the legal eagles, everyone's afraid to say anything to anyone, and they think that this is the way you get exposed. And I'm shocked 30 years into this how easy it is, and I was a reporter forever, and I knew you as a kid and was trained by people like you, how easy it is to just look and lie and expect me, and Don and I always get sideways on Angelos. Angelos expected me to take whatever he said and make it the truth. And somewhere between you saying it and me reporting it comes the filter of, is that BS? Are you telling me the truth? What's the foundation of the principles? Does this make sense? Why? Give me the why again. And it always goes back to who, what, where, why, when. You know, all the things, the basic tenets that were there. And if I don't believe it, I can't put my name on the byline above it. I can put your name in quotes around it, but I can't take that as my fact when I don't believe it. And I've got five Don Mohlers and Frasers over here saying, this is what we saw. And I've got Don out on the golf course saying, no, it was a hole in one, though somebody kicked it in. You know,
here's the thing. It's just making sure that everybody understands what the ground rules are.
Is the truth the ground rule, though?
Let me walk through the ground.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
If I'm dealing with Don, he knows what the ground rules are, and if he doesn't want to talk to me, he's going to say, I can't talk about that, or I'll tell you off the record, and I'll say, I don't want it off the record, because I'm going to find out what's going on from somebody else if you don't tell me. If you want to talk to me for background, I understand what that means, and so do you. You may want to do that because you want me to understand what's going on. And if we don't have that relationship, we probably are going to have some trouble. The problem is mostly with people that are not familiar with all of that. And if you don't, I mean, well, I always tried to explain it to people. If I was talking to somebody that I knew had not been in front of a reporter before, so that I don't want to take advantage of somebody. I mean, you know, I think in the beginning, it's too easy to do in the beginning of your career, because you want the story. You want to hear them. Then after a while, you think you really need to have a very face-to-face relationship with somebody that's helping you. The truth, I mean, sometimes somebody, Seymour Hersh described objective reporting in the U.S. I mean, he was more, I think he thought more favorably about the way the Europeans do it. But he said objective reporting is when you get somebody to tell you a lie to balance the truth. you know, there's an instinctive thing to want to write a balanced story, but sometimes there isn't any right. balance.
And that's your point. Sometimes
so
there
you don't
isn't
want to invent
balance.
The balance if it's not really if it isn't there. So, I mean, that was always the way I tried to proceed.
The key word, I think, there, Frazier, as you said, is truth. It's interesting as we peel this onion back, and I hope for folks out there with two journalists sitting here getting an insight as to how the business works, and I know we're coming up on a break. So much to talk about. We will get to Frazier's great new book, The Daily Miracle, but I just had an interaction. It's funny what you said about the ground rules. Just had an interaction yesterday with a reporter, a fairly lengthy interaction about an issue. And I've done this a number of times over the years, probably did it with you. I sometimes, if it's a complicated issue that's more than a one or two sentence answer, I will often say, here's what I'd like to do, if it's okay with you. I'd like to talk off the record. Take all the notes you want. My guess is, at the end, we're going to come back, and everything I've said off the record, I'm going to say, yeah, it's fine. But that way, I don't have to parse my words so that I don't say something that sounds silly or misrepresents.
Now, what happens
issue.
When the journalist doesn't respect that?
I would say that this is why I get so angry at the president. So angry at the president. I guess it can happen. Nestor, I've never had a journalist.
Well, we have dirty
I've
cops.
Never had
we
a
have dirty,
journalist
you know,
betray
like,
that. I've never had him betray off the record, background, deep background. I've never had one.
Because they want to call you back next week.
Because.
And they also know you're a trained professional.
Well,
that's different than me talking to an athlete or even me talking to a football coach who's not really a trained professional. But, he's got a trained professional next to him trying to mince and parse every word. And Frazier, I'll tell you, I tell Don this all the time. If this Baltimore Positive is going to be a PR effort, we might as well bag in it because no one will listen to it. You know, Art Modell said to me when he stole the team off the Baltimore, the first time I ever sat with Art Modell, he said to me, young man, you report what's fair and what you think, because if all you ever right. do is praise me, they'll never believe a word you say. And
good for him.
I'll never forget Art saying that to me. And he saw it that way because he was 65 years old at the time. He'd been kicked around like a pinata. He'd sat in league meetings. He watched the league go from something he bought with $4 million of debt to something that we had $300 million. So I think part of that comes with, look, I met you when I was 17 years old, getting my permission slip signed by the Baltimore Washington Newspaper Guild to get into the Baltimore Sun. You know, you've always been older than me. Don's been a mentor to me. I met him in 1982.
Frazier and I are
right?
older than almost everybody.
But the conversation having would have been a different conversation, I think, dramatically 30 years ago, just based on our experience in walking the world when you were a high school principal, as opposed to a 20-year trained public communicator, all of those things that you learn about on the record and off record. What I've learned in the modern era is people out on Facebook that are seeing Russian-led propaganda during a political, they don't know truth. They don't know these rules. They didn't go to they really have a difficult time disseminating what's in the National Enquirer and what they're seeing on nightly news from what like is really happening in the world. And that's very Orwellian. Can we take a break and pick it up on
perfect,
that?
Perfect spot to take a break. So much to talk about. We've got to talk. We're here the day after the President of the United States tells everybody it's okay for foreign entities to become involved in our elections. We got Frazier's great new book, The Daily Miracle. That's going to take you inside journalism. You're going to love it.
Can we just do that in the next segment?
Next segment, The Daily Miracle. So much to talk about. We're here at State Fair. Frank Zappa.
Yeah, we're going to change.
We're
going to get Aretha, Paul McCartney, Freddie Mercury, Stevie Wonder. I want to get Mick and David behind.
There you go.
We'll be dancing in the streets.
So we got so many great sponsors: Fadley's, Jennings, State Fair. Everybody's getting on this Baltimore Positive train. So what do we say, Nestor, as we come back?
All right, we're going to come back. We're going to talk to Frazier Smith about his book. We're also going to talk about Governor Schaefer in the next. We have to go overtime.
Way overtime.
Evan,
today.
We need caffeine over here. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, WNST Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're in Catonsville. Stick with us.